Welcome to Rainy Day Rabbit Holes,
a uniquely Pacific Northwest podcast.
I'm Shay.
I'm Jason.
On each episode, we take you on a journey through the weird, wacky, and wonderful tales of Pacific Northwest history.
So grab your North Face jacket, strap on your Tevas, grab a frosty, funky kombucha, and
let's fall down the rabbit hole. In the heart of the Pacific Northwest lies Bellingham, a city where myth masks the stark realities of its past. Amidst tales of ancient curses, the expulsion of the Chinese stands as a haunting reminder of the racism and injustices that once plagued its streets. Today, these scars serve as poignant lessons, urging us to confront our history and strive for a future built on empathy and understanding. Today, on Rainy Day Rabbit Holes, I'm going to do my best to not ruin Bellingham as I tell you the tale of the Bellingham Curse.
Oh no, Shay's going to ruin Bellingham.
Welcome back to the show, my big brother Jason. Hi, Jason.
Hello. I'm going to apologize. Hi, Shay. I'm going to apologize immediately to everybody in Bellingham. Shay's going to ruin Bellingham. I can tell already.
So, Jason, we've had really good feedback about you guesting on the Mayhem and the Mob episode. So people really got a kick out of having you on the show and hearing from my big brother.
No, that's fun. I guess there was a lot of people drunk that day, so fantastic.
So because of all the positive feedback, we decided that Jason is going to occasionally bring us a tale from the history of the American Southwest, which he cleverly coined as, what is the name of those episodes?
That would be Sunny Day Rabbit Holes.
I
know. Crazy unique. Never heard of it before, but there you go.
So those are the rabbit holes you go on when you're trapped inside because it's 117 degrees out.
Yeah, something like
that. And you're like, I'm not leaving my house and my air conditioning.
It's all rabbit holes about Antarctica and places where it's cold.
I know. You're just like, I'm going to think cold thoughts. All right. So you guys will have to keep tuned for that. So Jason, how's life treating you back in 1864? Because that's where I hear your state is these days.
Oh, yeah. Don't even get me started on that. So that was before Arizona
it was even a state. It was a territory.
It's ridiculous.
Oh,
yeah,
my.
You know, we became a state on Valentine's Day. How about that?
Oh,
how about
that's
that
very
for
romantic.
A Valentine's Day gift?
Yeah, yes.
Very romantic. And now we're having these things happen.
Yes.
So,
well, I just want to let anyone who needs to know that Washington State is a great place to camp if anyone named Jane needs to take a road trip. Just putting that out there.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's get into the story, Jason. You ready?
All right, let's hear it.
To go back to your favorite time period?
All right, yep. Let's hear it. All right. 1800s already destroyed, but
yeah, you ready for me to ruin them some more?
Let's have some mayhem. I'm ready for this.
All right.
Let's do it.
So today, we are traveling north from Seattle, Washington, about 88 miles or an hour and a half, or because of traffic, that's 2.5 hours, to the city of subdued excitement.
Wait a minute. Subdued.
That is its nickname.
Okay. Subdued excitement.
So something excellent happens and they're like, I guess that's cool, bro.
Yeah, that's literally like, it's, I don't know, kind of weak exertion. You're like,
city of subdued.
Am I excited? I don't know about it. Maybe I'm excited. Maybe I'm not. Oh, this is one of my favorite phrases. It's like being whelmed. You can be overwhelmed and underwhelmed. Can't you just be whelmed?
Yeah, Bellingham is just whelmed by everything. They're like, yeah, I guess we've seen that before.
Kind of whelmed by Bellingham. So,
so welcome to Bellingham. Now it's a laid-back, inclusive community with, Jason, 17 breweries.
Ooh, okay. Not whelmed by Bellingham anymore.
I know. Plenty of cool restaurants and a thriving outdoor scene. So if you are into mountain biking, I don't know if you've ever heard of that sport before, Jason.
I I really haven't. I haven't actually heard of that or done it actually today already.
Today already, twice. Oh. It's also close to some great skiing. There, it's right on the water. It's on Bellingham Bay. How convenient. And it's just, it's absolutely gorgeous up there. You're just a hop, skip, and a jump from Canada. So one person I know who lives up there said that there's a lot of Canadians that come down and the... Was that your cat?
That or a ghost? The cat. That was not a ghost. That was actually the fuzzy little monster that lives with me.
So they said that the freeway signs, there he goes again, are, you know, 65 miles per hour, but the Canadians come down and they think that's 65 kilometers per hour. So all the Canadians are going 45 miles per hour on the freeway. But according to legend, the city is cursed by the spirits of several Chinese miners who died in the old Seaholm coal mine. As a result of this curse, Bellingham residents are either unable to leave the city or always destined to return, no matter how they might try otherwise. You'll never escape Bellingham. Cue the spooky music. Ooh, that should be their city motto. Put that on a bumper sticker. You'll never escape Bellingham.
You'll never be more than whelmed by Bellingham.
So, of course, like any area in the Pacific Northwest, the first inhabitants of the region were the indigenous peoples of the area. The North Coast tribes were mostly the Lummi, Nooksack, Samish, and Tsimihu Salish-speaking peoples. For thousands of years, the native residents enjoyed the bounty of the sea, the tidelands, and the rivers. But this wonderful life was soon to be no more. As European explorers began to arrive in the 1700s, starting with the Spaniards in 1775. They were followed in turn by the Russians and the English, and finally the American colonies in 1792.
Not so much good food on those last two.
No. The English is just like, let's boil everything and put a potato on it. It's also Irish cuisine. Here you go. Yeah. So Captain George Vancouver of the British Navy, who we can thank for many of the names around this area, named it Bellingham Bay for Sir William Bellingham, whoever that dude is. I'm sorry if I sound very disgusted and bitter, but I just listened to an episode of Cautionary Tales about the slaughter of the Incas by the Spanish in the 1500s and learned that it is estimated that 9 out of 10 natives of the Americas died from disease brought by European settlers. So, yeah. Anywho.
Yeah, that's you know, those...
Fun time.
If somebody comes and brings you blankets, just say no.
Yeah, exactly. So in 1852, a couple of settlers from California were looking for a good place to build a lumber mill. They decided that the mouth of the Whatcom Creek on the edge of the Puget Sound was the perfect place. They built the mill, and soon the area began to draw other settlers. Soon there were 4 settlements, Whatcom, Seaholm, Fairhaven, and Bellingham.
And Catan. Oh wait, sorry, something different.
All of those settlements later became the city of Bellingham in 1904. So we're before it was actually the city of Bellingham. So the area was booming with loggers, miners, railroad workers, and cannery workers, because this is right on the Puget Sound. So of course, fish, shellfish, big business there. Like all other areas of the Pacific Northwest, these settlers pushed out the native residents. In 1855, the Lummi chief and other leaders signed the Treaty of Point Elliot, which ceded most of the tribe's aboriginal lands to the United States in exchange for a 15,000-acre reservation. That worked out really well for them, I'm sure. All of this time, the Lummi people were helping the white settlers, building mills and houses, working in the logging industry, and ferrying goods and passengers up and down the area's rivers and streams. So at this time, the mill was a major source of employment for the region. But in 1873, a fire destroyed the mill. Of course, other mills rose up to take its place, and lumber remained one of the leading industries in the Bellingham Bay area for nearly three quarters of a century. Okay, so here's where we get into it. The other major industry in the area was coal. In the mid-1850s, Captain William Paddle was told a tale by the local native tribes of an area with black fire dirt.
Ooh, that sounds fantastic. I know. But I got to circle back really
Paddle?
Quick. Paddle? Captain William Paddle. Yeah, well, exactly.
It's,
like,
it's P-A-T-T-L-E.
Okay.
Could it be Patle? Right. I don't know, but Paddle sounds good.
Patel.
Patel. Could be Patel.
I thought maybe he was, you know, named after he rolled in on a canoe and everybody was like, oh, check that guy with his paddles.
I don't know. Maybe right, it's something that he liked
Captain
in the bedroom.
Paddle.
Ooh, Captain Paddle.
Wow. I wasn't going that route, Shay, but, you know, that's an insight to something I didn't need to know. Thanks, Scard. Yep. Well, that's at least another three sessions of therapy. Thanks.
What do you say? Yikes on bikes.
yikes on bikes.
So pretty soon, a 17-foot thick seam of coal was discovered. The land's owner mined about 60 tons of it, which he sold for $16 a ton. And then he sold the land off to the California-based Bellingham Bay Coal Company. They soon opened the Seahome Mine. This mine became the largest employer in the territory, and a bustling town soon grew up around it. People came from all over to work in the mines, and this, of course, included Chinese immigrants. As we discussed in episode 7, titled This Is Not a Political Podcast, The Dark History of San Francisco's Chinatown, in the mid-1940s, China was suffering. They had just been defeated by Britain in the First Opium War. Then a series of natural catastrophes occurred, resulting in widespread famine, uprisings, and unrest. So when the news of the American gold rush in San Francisco reached China, many Chinese decided to take the chance and seek their fortune across the sea in approximately 1848. Around 25,000 Chinese came to America in the 1850s alone. So that's a big influx of immigrants. But like many other immigrants who came to strike it rich on gold, they discovered that due to many factors, including racism, dwindling gold veins, and too many miners, the dreams of gold were just a pipe dream. So many of these immigrants traveled north to seek work in the rich industries of the Pacific Northwest, like fishing, lumber, or mining. The Seahome Mine, like many industries in the area, took advantage of the cheap Chinese labor. But, like any coal mine at this time, it was a dangerous place. Fires, floods, tunnels collapsing were all risks of the trade. After years of accidents, deaths, and declining profit margins, most importantly, the mine was officially closed in 1878.
For a minute there, I thought you were going to, like, disasters and drive-ins and decapitations. And
drive-ins?
Well, I don't know what you said. Disasters and something else.
Cave-ins?
All I could think about was cave-ins, yeah.
Drive-ins.
Disasters and cave-ins and decapitations.
Decapitations, so. Probably. Then, just 4 years later, in 1882, the Chinese Exclusion Act was passed by Congress and signed by President Chester A. Arthur. This act,
that old gem.
Yeah. This act provided a 10-year ban on Chinese laborers immigrating to the United States. It required anyone from China who sought entry to the United States, such as diplomatic officers, to obtain certification from the Chinese government that they were qualified to immigrate, meaning wealthy and not laborers. Thus, very few Chinese could enter the country. So it also meant that if you were Chinese and you were in the United States, if you left the United States to go back and visit your family at home, you could not return.
I was going to say, are they just not letting people back in, even though they've been over here for many years?
Yeah. So they didn't actually kick everybody out, but they just didn't allow anybody to come back into the country. There was a few diplomats that could do that, but yeah, it was pretty rough.
Yeah, it sounds rugged.
It's not racist at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no.
No.
Yeah, well, when it literally names Chinese Exclusion Act. Yeah.
Well, it gets better.
Okay.
The freshly passed Chinese Exclusion Act served to further fan the flames of tension and hate in the Pacific Northwest against the small population of Chinese in the area. Local workers resented the cheap wages of the Chinese and their miserly ways. And in 1885, Whatcom County... Yes?
Hang on a second. Yeah, let's talk about that for a second.
Okay.
So the cheap wages... They don't have a choice but to be miserly because you're not paying them enough.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I hate those cheapos. Yeah, here's 10 cents for your day's worth of labor. Like, have fun. Right. Like, that seems ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, it was. They were taking away jobs from the white laborers, and they lived very frugally, so they weren't participating in the economy. But they also were paid... you know, a fraction of what white people were paid. So they didn't have any choice. Their money all went to just trying to have a place to live and food. So they didn't have money to spend on, you know, frivolous things.
Like you know, living.
Handkerchiefs. I don't know. Was that a thing in the 1800s?
Handkerchiefs. I don't know. Maybe that was frivolous. Maybe
handkerchief money. Everybody seemed to have handkerchiefs. Well, you needed a handkerchief to hold up to your nose because of the smell in the 1800s.
That guy's got three handkerchiefs. He's living large.
God, he's rich. Look at all those handkerchiefs.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, look at Mr. Fancy Handkerchief.
So in 1885...
Right, Captain Handkerchief.
Captain Handkerchief. God. In 1885, Whatcom County civic leaders demanded that all Chinese leave the area by November 1st. As other Chinese around the Pacific Northwest, like in Seattle, were being beaten and sometimes even killed, the Chinese in this area decided, like, yeah, we're gone. We're not going to risk this. So the Chinese community in the Whatcom County, Bellingham area left. On November 7th, the residents of the area, that would one day be Bellingham, gathered together to celebrate the expulsion of the Chinese from the area. They marched in a torchlight parade. They listened to a rousing speech from the mayor, enjoyed songs by the Glee Club, and marveled at a fireworks display.
So fireworks coming from China,
right?
I'm sure, like, yeah. Right? You know, I'm really glad the people that gave us fireworks. What a better way to celebrate being racist and kick him out than, you know, woo, check this out, fireworks,
right?
Like, yeah, you can go, but you got to leave those fireworks. I don't know. If I were Chinese in here, I'd be like, I'm going to learn how to speak Japanese really well. I'd be like, no, I'm Japanese.
Oh,
how are you going to tell the difference?
No, it's not better for the Japanese.
Oh, that's true. Everybody who's not white is on the block. Great.
So,
I also want to know what the songs, the Glee Club. Yeah, we got to practice our anti-Chinese songs.
Jesus. Oh, gosh. Of course, it's also dark. Yeah.
The fireworks just get me. That's brilliant. Fantastic. So, yeah, no wonder the lumber mill burned down. Probably fireworks
from kicking
some of their indigenous people out.
Well, you know, the thing that gets me, okay, the European settlers came here and pushed the indigenous people out. But then when immigrants came here and they weren't trying to push the European settlers out, they're like, could we just like join your club? And they're like, fuck no, we don't want any outsiders. You're like, what did you...
Because you realize where you came from, right? You
right.
Know. You know.
You're immigrants. You were not born here. Oh my God. Okay. Sorry. I get real worked up about the 1800s.
Yeah, that's why you I can tell. But it's very interesting in America that it's the interlopers that have come in that are all of a sudden being like, yeah, we can't have any more.
No, we need to keep
that don't look like us.
Right? No. We need to keep the Americas pure. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, what about all the people that you just like shoved behind you?
Yeah. Pardon me, excuse me, step aside.
What's all this?
Been here forever.
What's all this stuff with the headdresses? Do you have a flag? No flag, no country.
Thanks, Eddie.
Jason, did the indigenous peoples of the Pacific Northwest even think about just having a flag? Could have solved so many problems. They're like, nope, we have this flag and it's right here. You can't come in. And the British would be like, oh, well, pardon me. Excuse me. Didn't know you had a flag.
They were too worried about enjoying this lovely land and being like, yeah, isn't this place amazing?
Yeah, jeez. Okay, anyways, my rant's over.
All right, rant's over. And you should cut all that. So, singing songs.
Oh, yeah, we were at the parade. Yay, all the Chinese are gone. Parade, woo!
We were at the rally. I mean, parade.
Right. So here's the thing. They had been invited to this gathering by an article in the Whatcom Reveal, which read, "The Chinese are gone. We rejoice. Every person who rejoices in the exit of the Mongolian serfs and coolies is cordially invited."
Wow. Oh, that is...
Yeah. Nice. Okay, and so here's some other...
It's interesting.
...wonderfully xenophobic statements that were also published, like, okay, for every Chinese employed, an American home is destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least they made it rhyme.
Mm-hmm. The paper introduced a boycott of Chinese and their businesses, and residents who refused to sign the boycott had their names published in the paper.
Oh, so you, if you didn't even just show up, you were just, they were like, oh, yeah,
didn't sign
this person
the boycott.
Loves the Chinese.
Yep. So a Chinese deadline was set up, a line that the Chinese were forbidden to cross to enter Fairhaven, which is a community now part of Bellingham, from 1898 to 1903. And even after 1903, they weren't exactly welcome with open arms. Other immigrants flooded into the area to fill the labor void left by the Chinese workers. And this, of course, also angered the locals. On September 4th, 1907, 500 white men gathered in Bellingham with the intent of driving out the community of South Asian workers, mostly Sikhs from Punjab in northern India, led by xenophobic groups such as the Japanese Korean Exclusion League. These rioters had a mission of scaring them so badly that they would leave town. They rampaged through the town, breaking windows, throwing rocks, beating people indiscriminately, and pulling the migrant workers out of their homes and places of employment. By the end of the day, they rounded up about 200 of the South Asian immigrants, and they corralled them into the basement of City Hall to spend the night. And within 10 days, the entire South Asian population left town. What does this all have to do with a curse? Well,
yep. I'm sure lots of people were cursing on their way out.
Right. Well, we will dive into that after the break. Do you like true crime? Are you short on time? Are you a poet and you don't know it? Well, if you answered yes to any of those questions, then I have a podcast for you. Our pod friend of the week is Killing 15 Minutes, a true crime podcast quickie. Sam and AJ are a brother and sister duo. Sam writes a script, and AJ has no idea what the topic is until it's time for him to read it. It's really hilarious if you are into laughter with your true crime. This week, they are discussing John Aykroyd and his crimes, along with missing 411 and other topics connected with the case. This is the killer of Highway 20, which you will remember from our episode 8. This is not a true crime podcast, the serial killer of Highway 20. So it's a great story. You definitely need to check it out.
I'm Sam Rossi.
And I'm AJ Carey.
Join us every Wednesday as we summarize and discuss true crime on Killing 15 Minutes.
That's right. 15 minutes or less on some sick puppies, serial killers, and criminals. Every Wednesday.
I write it, AJ reads it. Available on all major audio platforms.
And please follow us on all major social media outlets as well.
You can, of course, find Killing 15 Minutes wherever you get podcasts and follow them on social media. All right, on with the story. So...
All right, Paul Harvey. And now the rest of the story.
Oh my God, that just takes me back to being at Grandpa and Grandma's house.
Good old Paul Harvey.
And to remember Sunday nights, it would be for dinner, you would either have saltines with jelly on them, or maybe it would be cottage cheese with canned peaches, or it would just be bowls of cereal. That was Sunday night dinner, because we went to church twice on Sunday. Do you remember
that? Got to get in twice. Yep. And, you know, couldn't afford a Sunday dinner because of all the handkerchiefs that we had. So, yeah. Got to save up for that handkerchief money.
Well, what the listeners may not know is our grandfather was actually the preacher at our church. So, yeah, we were kind of forced to go to every single service. Okay. So, what about this legend of Chinese miners lost in a mine cave-in? Or a drive-in, as Jason would say. They were just down there watching a movie and like just minding their own business.
That's what the people in town said. Look at those guys just down there watching movies, hanging out. Who's going to do all this work? Sure isn't me.
Right.
But we can't have anybody else that doesn't look like us in to do work. Like,
so is it true? And what does it all mean? So there's no mention in primary sources about the incident. There are many reports of both Chinese and white men perishing in the mines, but none that actually fit the legend. But in 1888, the Whatcom Reveal reported, this is fun, Mr. Hastings has a gang of 20 men grading Holly Street to connect with 13. They are filling in the old cave hole where six Chinamen were buried in the coal mine a dozen years ago. So that's really
I don't know if you can say cave hole on tape. It's getting kind of crazy.
Cave hole.
It's another session of therapy right there.
So according to the Good Time Girls, which is a Bellingham tour company that you just have to check out. Yeah, they have a history blog.
And I'm back in. Yes.
So they have the Belling history blog, and the Good Time Girls do some incredible tours. I cannot wait to go up there and go on a tour.
Oh, that sounds amazing. I'm in on name alone. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's like sin and gin.
Ooh, definitely.
I'm like, I'm in. I'm in. You had me at sin and then double down on the gin.
That's right.
So according to the Good Time Girls, Bellingham Tour Company, there are no newspaper entries from 1876 and the surrounding years to corroborate the story of a cave-in killing six Chinese workers in the mine. The tale resurfaced in 1949 in an article in the Bellingham Herald dated Sunday, January 5th. It's titled, Story of Chinese Lost in Mine Cave. In here is story. It's a very weird headline.
Okay.
Although the article does reiterate that virtually all means of disproving or proving the story have been obliterated by time, they report the tales told by some local old timers, which are always very accurate, as you know.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So Cecil Morse, a hardware store owner, said that we were told that if we could dig into the old mine, we would find gold in the money belts of the Chinese who were drowned when the mine flooded. So there's a story that the Chinese would carry all of their wealth on them in money belts. And so that the bodies of these Chinese miners had gold on them.
There's gold in them there, Chinese.
Exactly.
That's crazy. Okay.
Another old timer who remained anonymous for this story, and he doubts the story of the Chinese miners, said something very telling. This is what he said. And another thing, no one liked the Chinese in those days because they worked for practically nothing and lived like misers. They were apart from the community and looked upon suspiciously. It was believed that they had every penny of their savings buried under the floor or carried on their person for safekeeping. Well, we were all treasure hunters at heart, and it's not hard to see how such a story could get started and last so long. I think he said it right there. So in addition to the lack of any substantial evidence that six Chinese workers were buried in the mine, either on purpose or by accident, there is little to suggest that Chinese workers were even working in the mine. For the mine, sure, they were employed in the sorting and washing of coal. But the deeper a worker was willing to go into the mine, the higher the pay. So those jobs were reserved for the white workers. It's unlikely that six Chinese workers and no white workers would have been deep enough to be buried in any case.
Hmm.
So that's another strike against this story. They probably okay. weren't actually in the mine shafts. They were out washing the coal, which was the least desirable job.
Yeah. I mean, how do you get coal clean? Like,
yeah, it's a dirty job.
I want to see my face shining in this coal.
So what does this story have to tell us? I think that it's a good representation of how the Chinese were viewed at the time. Firstly, that their lives mattered less than white men. Second, there is an element of Orientalism and mysticism at play here. The idea of the spirits of the mystical Chinese imparting a curse, as well as the idea that the bodies of the miners might have their life savings on them in the form of gold on their corpses, both speak to how people thought of them.
Yeah, the mystical Chinese is that's a good take on it. That's very interesting. Yeah, I can see that being totally and completely.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. There's this Orientalism that there's this like ancient knowledge, magical practices. You know,
these guys are magic because they save their money,
right?
And are very frugal. We better get them out of here.
You know, you get a lot of that today, especially in the health and wellness industry. There's a lot of Orientalism in the yoga industry.
Oh, interesting.
You know, these Indian gurus have deep mystical knowledge. Their practices, their herbs have this deep mystical impact just because they're from this region. It's Orientalism.
It's really interesting too, because that same sort of thing is held true for, I don't know, the first peoples of America.
Sure.
Here when the European settlers came in, it's like, you realize, you know, you kind of had that same thing going on. It's just, I think it's, you know, fear of the unknown in this particular case.
So, right. Well, and then this misunderstanding of another people's culture. We've done that here in this country to the indigenous people as well. We put a mysticism on their culture and we misrepresent it a lot of times.
Absolutely.
Especially in movies 100%. And TV. I mean, look at Star Trek Voyager.
Oh God. Okay.
The character
Is
Chakotay.
This about Chipotle.
Chipotle.
I'm sorry.
Chakotay.
Chakotay.
Who has a tattoo on his face that's supposed to be a Native American tattoo. And there's all of these tropes around his character that are supposed to be his deep Native American beliefs. And then the guy who actually served as the consultant for that made it all up.
Yep. I only watch Voyager for Janeway anyways.
I like
just
because
she loves there's coffee in that nebula. Let's go get it.
Make it yourself.
That's right.
So, is there a curse on Bellingham? I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, other than the fact that it's subdued enthusiasm or subdued, whatever. It was.
Yeah, maybe that's the curse. Is you're never going to get excited about anything. Well, I mean, I think that the residents of the area in the late 1800s, they deserve to be cursed.
Fair enough.
But the legend of this curse is a good way to remember the history of the area and how immigrants were treated at the time.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a great way to remember the past, to learn from it, to honor the brave immigrants who risked everything to come here. And hopefully to strive to never repeat the wrongs of our ancestors. Like, that's why we keep bringing it up, right?
Well, I mean, it's part of our past.
It's part of our past.
To, like, understand. And understanding that will help us going forward, hopefully. Hopefully.
Yes.
Some of us.
Hopefully.
Some of us I worry about.
Some of us want to take us right back there.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Arizona, looking at you.
I was going to say, sorry. Can't say anything about Arizona. Yeah, I was going to say,
1864 was a great time for one type of person. One type of person. Yeah. All right, we're not going to get political on this. All right, in the meantime, I want to give a little love to Bellingham. It is actually a really, really wonderful place, and I love it.
I do too, actually.
Yeah.
Bellingham, more like Belling Meh.
No, that's actually, how they feel about it. They're like, I don't know. It's kind of okay.
It's not. It's Bellingham.
Bellingham.
I love ham. Ham's good too. I like Bellingham. Actually, I really do like Bellingham. It's a really cute place. It's fantastic. It has got some world-class mountain biking right there that I've actually gotten to, spend some time and go out and sample. Shout out to all the guys at Transition Bike, which is based in Bellingham.
Transition Bike. Sorry, that was dumb. I should cut that. Yep.
And then Galbraith Mountain. Everybody that takes care of Galbraith Mountain makes it a riding mecca. That's just fantastic. So Bellingham's a lovely place. If you guys ever get a chance to check it out, I would highly suggest it. It's a cute little place.
Yeah, it's a small town. It's made up of mostly like historic brick buildings. And it's right on the water. It's on Bellingham Bay. Again, how convenient. And not only do you have that epic mountain biking, but you're close to skiing. And then, of course, you've got the water right there. So you can get out on the boat and fish. And like we said before, it's just a short drive to Canada. So it's like a good base camp if you want to go up and explore Vancouver. It's a good place to go explore the San Juan Islands. Deception Pass is really, really close there. And that's a very, very beautiful area that everybody should go visit if they come up here. Also, if you do get a chance to visit Bellingham, you 100% have to go to Boundary Bay Brewing and eat a Reuben sandwich. It is the best Reuben on the West Coast, in my humble yet accurate opinion.
Humble yet correct.
Yet correct. And then after you have a Reuben and a beer at Boundary Bay, then you walk across the street to Gruff Brewing, which at one time, the first time I went there, Jason, they had an Earl Grey tea stout. And I can't remember the name, but it was definitely named after Captain Picard. They often have Star Trek named beers.
It was named after the Earl of Grey?
The Earl of Grey, yes. So good. And you could not ask for a more dog-friendly town. So if you have a four-legged friend, you can take that dog basically everywhere. Like, nobody's going to turn away your dog. And then if you do find yourself in Bellingham, make sure that you book a tour with Good Time Girls. Fantastic.
Right.
So their tours include, like I said before, Sin and Gin. How about Gore and Lore?
Ooh. All right. I'm in.
Buried Belling History, which is a cemetery tour. And they've got maritime tours. I mean, it's amazing. So head to bellinghistory.com to book a tour.
Dude, Good Time Girls do it all. That's fantastic.
Awesome. Good Time Girls dude. And now you know what I mean.
All right.
So most of my info from this episode actually did come from the great blog post at the Belling History blog, which is run by the Good Time Girls, as well as an article on Whatcom Talk, and of course, historylink.org. Can we give a big shout out to historylink.org, which supplies probably 90% of my research material for all of my episodes. Also, the chairman of the board of historylink.org is friend of the pod, Michael Sullivan. So there you go.
Michael's the man.
Yes. So thank you to everyone who did the whole assed research so that I could do my half-ass research. Thank you very much. And if you are in the South Puget Sound region, you should join us at the McMiniman's Elks Temple in Tacoma on Wednesday, May 22nd in the evening. Friend of the show, Steve Dunkelberger, will be presenting about Tacoma's Gilded Age, and you can find the link for the tickets on our Facebook page. So, and that's it for now, guys. Thank you, Jason, for helping me out again.
You're very welcome.
This was awesome.
That was fun.
This was really fun. Thank you. So what do you think? Is the curse a thing? You will never leave Bellingham.
You'll never leave. Yeah, I think they kicked him out. I don't understand the whole you'll never leave Bellingham. It's like, but get out. You'll
yeah, except for you guys.
But
get
yes,
out. Get out.
Get out. So yeah, I think the curse is some of the people in Bellingham back in the day were just idiots.
Well, here's the problem, though, is you go to Bellingham and you're like, especially in the summer, you're like, oh my God, this place is amazing. I want to move here. I never want to leave Bellingham, but then you see how much it costs to live there. And then you have to leave.
Yeah. And then you're like, well, and now I got to go. I gotta save some money for those handkerchiefs.
But on the other hand, there's 17 breweries. So if you go there and you go brewery hopping and then you get drunk and you die and you do never leave Bellingham.
See, I was going to say, that's the real reason why people don't leave Bellingham.
They're just drunk.
And I got drunk. Okay. I came here for the breweries like 4 years ago. And
and I never left. I haven't finished visiting them all.
Supposedly, I have a house back in Tacoma somewhere. I don't know.
So here's the other thing about Bellingham. So did you know that the DC sniper lived in Bellingham?
Mm-mm.
Also, there is a tavern called the Waterfront Tavern on the waterfront that is a place that Ted Bundy has hung out, as well as Kenneth Bianchi, one of the I-5 killers. He lived in Bellingham for a while. He had like a, I want to say an HVAC company in Bellingham. And I think he actually killed somebody in Bellingham. And then, yeah, the DC sniper lived in Bellingham. Bellingham has a huge mission, a homeless mission. And so he actually spent time there. And that was a place he lived before his estranged wife moved back to the DC area. And he, or that area, I can't remember. Don't quote me on that. And he went back there and committed the atrocities that he did. So
we do know that the Northwest does, you know, tend to breed
weirdos,
serial killers, maybe. I don't know. Weirdos.
Yep. But Bellingham is a great place. Don't let that scare you off.
Hold you back up.
Don't let everything we talked about this entire episode keep you from going to Bellingham.
Let Shay ruin Bellingham.
Not ruining Bellingham. That's my advice. Look, I'm not ruining Bellingham. I'm ruining the 1800s, which were already ruined. Okay,
continue
and nothing good
of ruining
came
the
out of the 1800s. let's talk to all of the indigenous people that used to live here. Oh no, you can't, because they were wiped out by smallpox. Sorry.
You're doing. I was going to say, you're doing the Lord's work there in the 1800s, but I don't know about that. I don't know whose work you're doing. You're doing somebody's work already in the 1800s, Shay.
Jeez. Good grief. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for tuning in. And please, 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 can you stop what you're doing? Pull over and share the link to our show with two people. That's all we ask. Share it with two people. Text it to them right this instant. Please.
Ooh, I'm going to send it to my sister, Shay.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
And then I'll send it to my mom.
Oh, that's also very helpful. Thank you.
Oh, man. I got to get this down.
Do you think your mom listens to this show?
I'm going to send it to my mom. Yeah, my mom's great. She'll totally listen to the show.
She only listens to it when I force her to listen to it when we're in the car together. And I can't let her listen to certain episodes.
She'll listen to this one.
Yes, because she
and my mom loves me.
She almost cried on the first one when I played it for her, and she's like, "It was so nice to hear you and your brother together."
She does know that we talk and we went to Japan together.
We went to Japan. Jason. Okay, my office manager, Erica. Hi, Erica. When we were on the phone earlier this week, she's like, okay, so my husband and I are going to go to Japan in December, and I'd really love it if you would help me plan the trip. And I was like, oh my God, thank you. That's all
I
ever wanted.
Dreams have all come true. They really do love me. That's all I've ever wanted in life, is to plan somebody else's Japanese vacation.
I know. I was like, I will do this for you if you bring me back some sunscreen.
That's right. I'll tell you what, if it's as half as good as our vacation there, it'll be fantastic for him.
Can we go back? When can we go back?
I'm free tomorrow.
Oh my God, I know.
When was the last time you just did something spontaneous? I mean,
dude,
I think that was the DC sniper's motto.
I could be packed and out the door in an hour into the airport. Okay. Seriously, like, I know where my passport is. I have a Delta American Express Gold Airlines card.
Ooh, let's warm that thing up.
I've wanted to go back literally every single day since we got back.
I agree.
Every single day. I've been like, you know what would be great is if I was in Japan right now. No, but seriously, people, sharing the show is the best way to support us. If you'd like to support us even further, like with dollars, that would be incredible. We do have a Patreon. And although I don't actually have the bonus episodes up yet, you will be getting them soon. So you can head on over to patreon.com and search for Rainy Day Rabbit Holes. There's multiple tiers. You get more stuff the more money you give us. Thank you. And it's just literally to pay back the several thousand dollars that we've already put into this. We thank you if you want to do that. If not, it's cool. It's chill. Just share. All right, guys. Well, we will see you next time with another great episode of Rainy Day Rabbit Holes podcast. All right, Jason. We'll see you next time.
All right.
Are we going to try this outro?
Let's do it.
All right. See you down the rabbit hole.
That one was the best. Long and hard for the existence of the clitoris. So.
Whoa. Whoa.
Oh, wait, that was on tape. Crap.
Whoa. Let's go into our bloopers.
Do not put that in the bloopers.